This episode is brought to you by CBS All Access. If you don't already subscribe to CBS All Access, please use our affiliate link by going to talkthroughmedia.com/CBS. Using our affiliate link gives us a little credit, which helps us to keep bringing you great content. U.S. residents only.
Welcome to episode 51 of the Star Trek Discovery podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm LT.
Yes, LT's back.
Yes, I am.
Well, thank you for coming back. And unfortunately, you are obviously seeing that Ruthie is not back with us. Unfortunately, her power is still out. Again, she's okay, and her cats are okay, but she is still without power and without internet. So I've talked to her, been talking to her quite a bit, but she's just not able to do the podcast right now. Hopefully, apparently they were out to her house today, so hopefully she'll have power and hopefully have internet by next week, so she'll be back with us next week. But James, who joined us last week, was unable to join us this week, and Kyle was hoping to have him on this week, but unfortunately our Walking Dead talk through recording went a little screwy this week, and we had to record all our stuff in pieces and parts. So those of you guys that listen to us on there, you're going to kind of get a weird episode this week, but he's editing that right now. So he wasn't available to join us this week, but thankfully LT, you are here with me, and we're glad to have you back. So
that's right. I mean,
yeah,
I got to say I'm here, El Guapo. So ready to talk some Star Trek again.
Yep. It's good to have you back. And you are a great fan of this show and of Star Trek. And, you know, we had you on Lower Decks too, and that was a great episode we covered too. that was probably the best one. But anyway, we're covering tonight, which I think was another good episode to cover, season 3, episode 4, titled Forget Me Not. But before we get started, we have a little bit of additional feedback and some other things to cover for last week's episode, season 3, episode 3, People of Earth. So let's open hailing frequencies. Okay, so first we have Errata.
Incorrect.
Well, the first one I'm going to give is my own incorrect, and that is I used the word propulsed when that was a part of the episode that I recorded without LT and James last week, and I said propulsed, and I'm listening to it while I'm editing. I'm like, wait a minute, propulsed is not a word. Propelled is the right word. So that's what I meant. Also, we got something from Jeff X-Force 11. He says, saw this post this morning in one of the BSG groups I'm a part of. And yes, I thought the same thing when I watched this week's episode of Discovery, a wall/hall of remembrance for those lost in battle is common, but I'm always taken back to BSG's, which was in itself a commentary on the memories after 9/11. And we see he's got a picture of it. I think that's from Facebook. And it's a picture of Tilly And in the background, you can see that wall of the badges with names on the bottom. So, and one other thing that I wanted to mention, but I did mention last week, wasn't an errata, but it was just something else that I forgot to mention. We get that explosion, you know, when the United Earth Defense Force shoots upon Discovery. And what do we get? Well, what we always get whenever there's an explosion on the bridge of a Star Trek ship, rocks.
Bridge rocks.
Yes. So I wanted to just acknowledge the fact that yet again, we get rocks on the bridge. And they look, I'm looking at the picture of Burnham on, yeah, I guess it was Iceland, you know, where it was taken, but, you know, right after she lands and discovers that, you know, there are, you know, multiple life forms, and she screams, yes, we see rocks that are very similar to the rocks that come out of the bridge.
Well, little did you know, they store their geological samples in the bins above the heads of the crew on the bridge.
Yeah, it seems that way. All right. So we got also a little bit of feedback from last week's podcast from Bob from Michigan. LT, why don't you read that?
All right. I'm seeing that I owe an apology for my last commentary. I certainly did not intend to offend anyone with my comment about Mary Wiseman. I was truly curious how the show might handle an actor's pregnancy, work it in or work around. I'm not in any position to cast stones as I, myself, am pushing maximum density. So I offer my mea culpa.
And I mean, I listened to my reaction to what you said, Bob. And, you know, I wasn't offended by anything you said. I think I was just basically reacting to what I think the writers and the producers of Discovery are trying to show, is that body positivity, you know, fat acceptance is something that we would see in the 23rd/32nd century. And, you know, there have been a lot of examples where, you know, we've seen some, I would say, not realistic types of body shapes in Star Trek. So I think them showing more realistic body shapes in Star Trek is a good thing. And I was kind of reacting to that. Again, I wasn't really offended by anything you said. I didn't think that what you said was offensive. I was just kind of reacting to the whole, like, what I think their intent is. So, so I don't think you needed to apologize. And if anyone was offended by it, you know, okay, you've apologized to them. You didn't need to apologize to me, is what I'm trying to say. So, all right. So I think that's it for last week's episode. I should also say that I myself have pushed maximum density. You know, at one point I was like 381 pounds, you know, at my highest. I'm under 300 right now. So, you know, I seem to be going in the right direction, but I still have a lot left to lose. So, you know, but if I don't lose all of it, that's okay, as long as I'm healthy. So that's the main thing.
And I think the big thing, Brian, is that if you heard the comments that I think all of us made, we don't have any real willowy people that were on the podcast commenting at that time anyway. So,
right. Yeah. Okay, so anyway, this week's episode is season 3, episode 4, titled Forget Me Not. It is written by, and these are ampersands, not ands, but I'll say them as ands because that's easier to say, Alan McElroy and Chris Silvestri and Anthony Merrinville. And the last two are staff writers on the show. Alan McElroy, I believe, is a supervising producer.
He works there.
I think he's a supervising producer, but directed by Hanley M. Culpepper, who you would probably recognize who directed the first three episodes this year of Star Trek Picard. So, and she has directed episodes of Discovery in the past, I believe. I think at least one from each of season one and season two.
She is one of their common directors.
Yes, yeah, she...
Her and Olatunde Osunsanmi and Frakes have...
Olatunde Osunsanmi is actually on staff. He is an executive producer. Hanley Culpepper, I was correct. She directed one episode in season one. That was actually a really good one. Season one, episode 12, Vaulting Ambition. She also directed season two, episode 10, The Red Angel. So, and then, of course, the three that she did in Picard, Remembrance, So I'll just, she also directed the first three episodes of Picard, which I said before. I can't think of all of them, but I remember the first one's titled Remembrance. The description from CBS.com is as follows. Burnham and Adira visit the Trill homeworld in hopes of unlocking the secrets trapped within Adira's mind. Back on the USS Discovery, Saru's efforts to help the crew reconnect with one another take a surprising turn. That is TVMA with language, and we don't know what the star date is, but the air date was November 4th, 2020 at 11:11 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 2:11 a.m. Eastern on the 5th Eastern Time. And I know that because I was doing that refresh again. So at 2:10, it wasn't available. At 2:11, it suddenly was. So that's why I can say with a lot of confidence that it was 2:11. And I think the last two were around 2:11 as well. So the runtime was 55 minutes and 23 seconds. So a longer episode, which I think all of the episodes this season so far have been over 48 minutes. So
yes.
I think one was 55, one was 54. The last one was 48, and this one was 55 again. So, all right, LT, what would you give Forget Me Not?
Well, I'm giving Forget Me Not a 9 out of 10. My tail and I both appreciate your concern.
I am going to give this one a 9.4, and I have to go back to the recommendations of the computer before the computer turned into the Sphere computer, also known as Zora, which we'll hear Zora's name mentioned in the listener various sauces, or actually not sauces. That's the other podcast we do.
That's the other
one. Yeah. Yeah. That's the yeses. But anyway, I'm going to give it 9.4. Using the recommendations of the Discovery computer, 9.4 limited dairy and therapeutic coloring books. All right. So, LT, why don't you read the first four listener ratings and I'll do the last four.
Okay. Well, Comic Geek Kev says 9 out of 10 bottles of good wine. Edwin from Arizona says 8.3, at least the wine's good. Jeff, X-Force 11, says 9.9, joys filling the room. And he loved this episode, and you will hear why later in his feedback. Wes from Minnesota says, this one was a little bit of a downer this week. I have to score Forget-Me-Not 8.75 symbiont pools out of 10.
Yeah, and I remember Wes really loved last week's episode. He remember it. If you recall, he gave it a 10.5.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. Haley from Colorado is next. She says, 7.8 Zora. Okay, episode, but not as good as the last couple. Rick from Cleveland says this was a pretty solid exposition episode. I rate it 8.7 out of 10. And thank you, Rick, for bringing this one up because I wanted to make sure it got brought up. 8.7 out of 10, responsibility hoarders. Clint from Indianapolis says, what a great episode. 9.7 dark matter theories out of 10. And lastly is Bob from Michigan says, 8.5 awkward family dinners out of 10. Okay, so it is time for our yeses.
Yes!
All right. Why don't you do Comic Geek Kev?
I shall.
Yeah.
Okay, with our listener yeses, we have Comic Geek Kev, who says, acknowledging how much the situation has to be affecting everyone, not just those who might be more prone to showing it, like Tilly. Saru's dinner, almost everything about it. It was clear it wasn't going to go the way he hoped, but it was such a beautiful effort for him as a new captain in a situation that he could have never foreseen, dealing with a crew of people from mainly human but different races. Mm-hmm. I'm satisfied with the explanation of Detmer's issues, but I do hope we maybe see her in a session of therapy or something like that. I don't think it should be considered over, especially since it's been acknowledged that everyone is having issues. The actress's performance at dinner was great, and honestly, the stress a helmsman must feel piloting one of those monsters with a crew on board and being responsible for all of them, I'm kind of surprised this hasn't been addressed in any other Trek show. When you listen to her talk about what she's done, it's pretty damn impressive. Maybe someone needs a vacation. I'm glad they didn't go with her being infected by control or anything like that, although I guess that's not out of the question. Culber. And it was cool to see Tal's actual previous host instead of just hearing their names. Nice touch.
Yes, I thought that was a nice touch as well, and it resonated even more to me. So, because in the past, I know they haven't always done that, or, you know, it's been mentioned, but like at a different point, you know, like with Dax, like, you know, they would have mentioned Emeny Dax or, you know, Curzon right. Dax, but they didn't do it like when we saw them all. It was done at another time. So,
and I may talk about that later.
Excellent. Okay. Wes from Minnesota is next, and I'm going to do the next three. He says more about the Trill than we saw in DS9. This was cool. A little callback to the classic season 3 episode Equilibrium, with Jadzia doing the same thing as Adira here, discovering past hosts. Adira really steals the show this week, and we finally got to see the other character, Gray. That whole thing with them was fantastic, and of course, if it had been feasible in 1994 when Equilibrium first aired, it probably could have been seen back then. The whole dinner scene reminded me so much of Star Trek VI's dinner scene with the Klingons. I hadn't thought of that, Wes, but yeah, I mean,
yeah.
It just reminded me of, like, you know, a dysfunctional Thanksgiving dinner, Christmas dinner, you know, more than anything else. And of course, Edwin says a similar thing. He says, Edwin from Arizona, yes to dinner drama. And the last, specific to part of the dinner drama, Bob from Michigan says, Dr. Culber's haiku. Not only his messed up poem, but the fact that he recognized Giorgio said one.
Which is a good point.
Yep, it's a good point.
Okay. Clint from Indianapolis said, I think the writers may have figured out how to use Culber other than Stamets' partner that works in medical. And I would wholly concur with that. He also says, a look at Trill culture and homeworld. Rick from Cleveland says, yes to the dinner scene. Detmer's bizarre behavior, her lack of self-awareness, was well written. It should finally answer the question of PTSD or control in her implant. She finally snapped with Stamets and gave the entire crew permission to acknowledge that they were not okay.
Yeah, that was good.
It was.
Yeah.
Yes, for Stamets. It's been a while since we saw snarky jerk Stamets. And we and we saw him this week both with Tilly and with Detmer. I had actually wondered if the writers had forgotten that part of the character's personality, which was on full display in the early seasons.
Yeah, and it wasn't just in the dinner scene, but before that, you know, when he kind of got all snarky in the engineering lab about dark matter, you know. We have subspace and we have subdomain. And that's all that, I forget how he said it, but yeah.
Basically, like all they share is a turn of language or something.
Yeah.
And he also goes on to say, yes, for Culber. I very much enjoyed seeing parts of this episode from his point of view. He's a good sounding board for Saru and seems to be very much be the ship's counselor before and after there was such a thing.
Yeah. And to me, I think it's good that they may be going that direction with him. Because they've kind of had this like two doctors thing. I mean, not to make it a Doctor Who thing, makes it sound like Doctor Who, but they've had this, you know, Dr. Pollard and Dr. Culber, and, you know, perhaps Dr. Pollard starts to handle, you know, some more of the, you know, technical medical stuff and Culber handles more of the psychological medical stuff. I don't know.
Or maybe Pollard is the specialist. Number two. She's the internist and, you know, he's the general, but
right. Yeah. And it may, you know, finally show, cause you know, we talked about it last week. I mean, he does his supplemental, you know, log, and he doesn't say chief medical officer. He says medical officer. And, you know, again, something that should probably go in a weak sauce here, but I'll mention it here just because they just need to get off their high horse and assign chiefs.
Yep. We need to know who the boss in that department is.
Exactly. Especially in that department above all others, because that's one where we have two doctors. Both of them could potentially be chief medical officer, get off the fence and say who the chief medical officer is and just be done with it. So
pick one. I mean, come on.
Exactly. Our last collection of yeses from our listeners is from Haley from Colorado. She says, yes to people finally realizing that 900 plus year displacement is a breeding ground for PTSD. I agree.
I can see that.
Yes to Zora talking to Saru. Thumbs up for Short Trek tie-ins. Yes. I totally agree with this. It was very surprising, but the moment I saw the screens, you know, turn red and kind of go spinning and that, I'm like, oh my God, ooh, it's Calypso. It, you know, and I didn't remember her name, but I was just thinking, oh my God, it's the computer from Calypso, you know.
When it changed from the tinny computer voice to the smooth, giggly computer voice.
Yes. And they used the same actress for the voice, mm-hmm, which I don't remember her name, but I know that she was someone who used to go out with Chris Pine. I'm going to look it up. I think her name is Annabelle Wallace. Yes. Oh, it lists her as present. So maybe she's still with him.
I know she was listed on the cast list, but I didn't see where it said what she was.
Yeah. Annabelle Wallace is the voice of the Sphere computer, you know, because she was also the voice that was in, Calypso. Yeah.
Okay.
So, so getting back to that, yes to the Philippa and Linus interactions. I wonder if she's going to try to eat Linus.
God, I hope not.
Yeah, I hope not too. Yes, for Stamets, growing as a person, backslide to season one, jerk, but got better. I would agree with that.
Yep.
And I like what Haley says here. Yes to the formerly dead guy being the most emotionally stable.
It seems like it.
Yep. Yep. All right. So that's it for our listeners. Let's move on to our yeses. LT, what do you have?
All right. My first yes is seeing the Trill homeworld. You know, anytime we get to go back to somewhere we've sort of been before, it's good to see. I appreciated the way they handled it. And I may complain about the interaction of the Trill later, but as far as, you know, seeing the planet, seeing the pools, I really enjoyed that. I think they handled it fairly well.
Yeah, I did too.
One of my big yeses this time was seeing the crew as a family.
Yes.
That we're getting to see the primary crew members bonding. We get to see them interact more. We're also noticing that you're getting more screen time, a little more depth, because what is it we've complained about it, other viewers have complained about it, that you've got all these people on the bridge and there's no character development. So we've gotten a little bit more of that this time. And it was, while it served the purpose of the plot that they were trying to get them to interact with each other off the bridge, then we got to see it. You know, we got to see those moments where they're informally talking and cutting up and eating, and it was good. One of my big yeses this episode was Saru growing his metaphoric Riker beard.
I was wondering what you're talking about in the comments or the notes about a beard. I'm like, I didn't see him grow a beard.
Yep. Well, I actually tweeted that Thursday, and I actually got a like from Doug Jones. So we had talked about it, you know, earlier this season. It just seems like that Saru has stepped up into the role of captain. And as I said, I think that he's grown his beard, just like we saw Riker, his character get better once he grew his beard. Well, I could have said once Saru shaved his hair, if you want to go with the Sisko angle, but I really see that his character has stepped up a lot. I mentioned it before with the dinner, but you're seeing more screen time for the rest of the bridge crew. And the ironic part was, is we've seen Nielsen more this season than we saw her when she was Arium. That Lieutenant Nielsen is played by Sarah Mittich, who originally played Arium. And then they brought her back once they replaced Arium with, was it Hannah Cheeseman?
Yes.
So it's good to see her, you know, getting a little more FaceTime, a few more lines, as a character. And it's the same thing with, you know, Owo and Detmer and some of the other ones that we're seeing them more.
Yeah.
And along those same lines, I am just like some of the listeners have said, I am so happy that we finally get a little more depth with Detmer.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think that she did a great job. This was her first real chance to step up and like have a meaty scene. That's not, you know, just a couple of lines here and there. You know, her scene there was pretty meaty. I mean, she got it showed, some definite PTSD there, and you know, kind of macabre at the same time. You know, yeah. I thought, gee, if you know this had been like a week before, it would have been a nice Halloween episode.
Yeah, well, and I like the fact that she finally got up in Stamets's grill. You know, let's give the proper chops to the people that are, you know, at the helm chair. That, you know, we all cut up about when she did her donut with the dark matter asteroid back whenever that was. Last season.
Season 2, episode 2, New Eden.
Yep. But that's one of those jobs that you don't really get enough, you know, you don't get enough love for the helm department.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like the fact that they didn't call her a helmsman. You know, they didn't call her a helm officer. They called her a pilot.
Right.
And I like that. You know, we could, I'm sure somebody's going to say, well, they never called them pilots before. But, you know, she's flying a big bird. I mean, she's doing a job. And I thought that was really good. They finally, you know, give some of those other departments some props and some chops and some meaty lines. And finally, for my yeses, I had to say it. The scene at the towards the end when Adira finally got to see all the previous hosts, and you know the hosts accepted her. I got kind of teary. I brined. I'll admit it. I cried a little.
Yeah,
because it was touching. I mean, I really liked
it was
that part, and it also showed something, the putting her in the continuity of all the other hosts, and just like you know, we've already heard in our listener comments, I wonder, had they had the money and the screen time, could they have done more of that? Yet one of the things that people complain about with Discovery is how things are more cinematic. But as we've said before, the original series was done on a shoestring budget. So there are things that I'm sure Roddenberry wanted to do that he couldn't do.
Are they still complaining about that?
Oh, yeah. But the fact that now we've got more budget, we've got better CGI, we've got more effects that we can enhance and expand those things that we should have seen then. And so I absolutely loved it.
I would agree. I think that those scenes on the Trill homeworld, well, I shouldn't say all of them, but more the scenes, you know, in the, I forget the name of the caves, but I thought that those were good. They were a certain step up from, you know, the Planet Hell type of thing that they did in the 90s with.
It was the Pools of Makala.
Right. The Pools of Makala. Right. Thank you. But anyway, certainly an upgrade from that, but also an upgrade, but also, and I haven't, it's, you know, been a year and a half since I've watched that episode, but from what I remember, it was certainly, it was in line with it. Like, it honored it, you know, it didn't,
yeah,
it updated it, but it didn't like radically, it wasn't the Klingons.
Right. We're not talking about egg-shaped heads. We're talking about something that, you know, enhanced and, well, I won't necessarily go improved, but it definitely beautified, prettied up
right. What
we had seen.
And you could also argue that 800 and some odd years had occurred since then. So it looking a little different makes sense.
Is okay.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with that, I enjoyed Adira, and I thought that Blue Del Barrio's performance this week, again, I thought she was really, really good. And I know that she's, you know, I'm using the terms from the episode. I know that the actor goes by they and them, so I guess I should try to use that, but I thought that their performance was excellent, and I thought that they had really done beyond their experience, because I know that they don't have a lot of experience acting. I know this is their first role, major role anyway. So I think Blue is doing a great job. And Ian also, he's doing a great job. I know he's been in a few other things, but this is the first time I'm seeing him. So I think he's doing really well. And I'm really curious, that relationship that is going to be there. How is he in Adira's head? Why is he in Adira's head? What is that going to mean? Is Gray going to come out at some point to anyone else? Like, okay, that sounded terrible.
Well, I'm going to talk about that later too.
Okay. But is Gray going to emerge visible, like in personality or whatever, to other people, like not just to Adira and be in Adira's head? I don't know. But anyway, I think it's all very interesting. And I liked, it did remind me a little bit of the episode that we were talking about, Equilibrium, because it had to do with this recessed memory type of story. And
right,
that Adira couldn't, you know, had a memory block because of this traumatic event, which I totally understand. And you know, makes me wonder why it happened, but I'll get more into that in my hold your horses, I guess. So, the last thing, and I want to say, and it was totally unexpected for me, but I loved that I saw the emergence of Zora in this. We saw Zora. If you haven't seen it, go back and watch the short treks and watch. It's the second short trek from the first, you know, season, the first group of short treks, titled Calypso. And that was actually written by Michael Chabon, who was one of the co-creators and the showrunner of Picard season one. And we see Zora in this episode, in that short trek, and it's kind of possibly a hint to what we're going to see, you know, at the end of the season. I don't know, but I mean, there's still certain questions that could be come up with this. But in any case, Zora played a big part of that story. And that was also the first time we heard the Vedraish. For at the time, it was kind of like suggested or hinted at it was probably the Federation. Well, we know now that it was a Federation. But anyway, to see Zora come through, it was kind of like I got giddy when I saw it. Like, oh, look at that. So anyway, that was great. And I like seeing that. So
yeah, it was, for me, I liked the fact that they, you know, paid the short trek off, that we had so much. And you remember, we talked about it.
Yeah.
When it came out, after that episode aired on the podcast, there was a lot of talk, you know, there's a lot of speculation in the fandom about, you know, is this going to happen? And when we knew that Discovery was going to move to the future,
right,
a lot of people were asking about it. And now we've sort of get the hint that maybe this will be paid off later on, or at least it's setting the stage for it to be paid off.
Right. I agree. Okay. So that's it for our yeses. So now it is time for our noes.
No. All right. Okay. For listener noes, we'll start off with Comic Geek Kev. And he says, Stamets crapping on Tilly. Yes, I know he came back and made up for it later, but this was just not necessary. Tilly deserves so much better as a character on the show and as a member of the crew. Wiseman is so good as Tilly, I really felt her pain when he shot her down. Her face acting is phenomenal, and I will concur. I like Adira, and I get the whole let's go get those memories scene, but it seemed a little long. Minor nitpick. The quilt was a nice touch.
I don't know about it being a little long. I think it was probably needed. I don't know. What's your take on it?
I'm on the fence. I think that they could have shortened it up a little bit. It did seem like at one point it was kind of long before Michael went under.
Yeah.
And I air quote the urgency that they were putting the neural stimulator sticks in the water was a little slow. If it's such an emergency, they just seem kind of like, okay, let's go get the sticks, boys. But I don't, to me, it really didn't affect the pacing of the scene. I think that it was as long as it needed to be. Maybe they could have shortened it up a little bit, but I don't think it clobbered anything for it to be the length it was. You know, it's not like one of those scenes we've complained about before where it's like talking and so much talking and you know, scene for the sake of chewing the scenery.
If you think about it, like if you compare this episode to say DS9's Equilibrium, yep. You have a host who kind of knows what's going on, right? So she can kind of guide things and kind of knows what is going on. Whereas Adira has no clue what's going on at all. So a lot of the extra time, I think, is in Adira and Burnham trying to figure out what's supposed to happen here. And, you know, I mean, if you want to give a no to this, I'll have the no in my nose, or maybe you will. I don't know. But there is a no that could have made it shorter. But I think given who was there, it made sense.
Yeah.
Right.
Which, just for the technical aspect of it, we know the Trill are wired to be hosts and humans aren't. So you could say that Adira was doing the best she could, considering that, you know, you're going from U.S. wiring to European wiring.
That's a good way to put it. Or 10 to 220 or something.
Or RS-232 input to USB or whatever analogy you want to throw for that.
Yep.
Okay. Well, we've got some from Clint from Indianapolis who says, the way too long scene of trying to get Adira to let the tentacles attach and accept the memories. About half as long would have still gotten the story across.
Well, obviously, and, Clint and Kev are two peas in a pod here. They both agree with each other. And like I say, I know where you're coming from, and I have a comeback for that. But given who I think was in there, it made sense. Notice what I'm saying there. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay, Clint says, we see just about every crew member on Discovery except for Jet Reno.
Yes.
And if James was here, he'd be going, no Jet Reno.
He'd probably say a little more than that.
Well, that's true. That's the edited James.
Yes, the edited James.
And Clint finally says, will we now have a Trill ghost as part of the crew? Good question.
As long as it's not a spirit that, you know, it's not like Sub Rosa.
Oh God, you went there. I'm going to, like I said, I've got one where I need to ramble about the Trill thing, but I'm going to do that in my whole drawers.
Okay.
It's something that dawned on me while I was working on the Jeep this afternoon. Sub Rosa.
You didn't like that candle. Oh, that was so bad.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was, just to take you guys back, I think most of you have heard me say that I once sold a story to Star Trek. And I had submitted a script in season 7 for Next Gen. And, I got my first chances to pitch to Next Gen in season 7 of Next Gen. But it was right around the time of Sub Rosa airing that I got the script back saying, we're not going to buy it. And I'm like, are you kidding me?
you bought the Scottish Ghost in the Lamp story.
Yeah. And you did not go for my story, like a 29th century, somewhat Borgified Federation crew, coming back in time to prevent, it was a time travel story. So it's like, are you kidding me? It just blew my mind. So I actually, back then, the letter that went to Jerry Taylor specifically mentioned Sub Rosa and how bad it was.
No bitterness there, Brian.
The letter worked. I got to pitch to her directly, and I impressed her enough to keep coming back to pitch and pitch again and pitch again for years. I was pitching to Star Trek like at least 3 or 4 times a year. So, it worked.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we have Rick from Cleveland. He says, no for Culber being the one to deliver the overall report on the crew's condition to the captain. That should be the job of the CMO. Dr. Pollard at least seems to be the CMO. Time for the writers to land the ship on that once and for all. Pollard is a lieutenant, and Culber is a lieutenant commander. So that's why I believe that Culber is the CMO, yet they still haven't called them that. So I'd have to go back and look at it to confirm that for sure. But I know in the past when I've looked at their two badges, Pollard was had 2 pips and Culber had 2.5. So I will probably go back and look at this. And if I'm correct, I will say. And if I'm incorrect, I will say so. If you hear a correct, then I was correct. And if I'm incorrect, you'll hear incorrect. Actually, you don't hear correct. You hear a ding, 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 ding. But anyway, so yeah. I've been doing that a lot lately. So I will do that again. All right. Wes from Minnesota is next. And he says, this was a big one. And it's a callback to Calypso, the Short Treks episode. Zora has now made her presence known. Okay. So that's a negative for you? Why is it a negative for you, Wes? I'm not really sure. In fact, I'm so not sure that I need to go back and confirm this.
Stability loss was due to an impact by a subspace interface pocket.
Yeah. He has that as a no. I'm not sure why. But
only Wes knows.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a problem with her making her presence known. I think that this was going to happen. So, and I don't think it's the reason why Zora is, where she is in Calypso. I think that was the whole Zora or, the computer, like taking on an identity. I think that was going to happen. That was just a logical thing, based on what we know about the sphere data. So. And especially, so much of it had AI.
Yeah, we knew it was there and we knew it was going to do something because it had fairly well integrated itself into the Discovery's computers.
And what we saw in Calypso, unlike what we saw with Leland, the AI that is Sora, at least in Calypso, seemed to be pretty benign. You know, it didn't seem to be
intent on crushing all biological sentient life in the universe. Right.
And I think Saru's observation about how the computer, the sphere data, seems to want to protect Discovery, I think that's probably what's going to happen. And what we could end up seeing is maybe an upgrade. I mean, maybe, you know, this is a thought that I had, is that maybe the sphere data upgrades the .7s, and the .7s upgrade Discovery or build a new Discovery, and we get the NCC 1031A, and that's why the 1031 is, you know,
lost, hiding in a nebula somewhere.
Exactly. So, but we'll see. We don't know. So anyway, surprised by your no, but you're entitled to it, Wes. Haley from Colorado is our last listener. No, she says, no to weak reason for Michael to go on the mission. I agree. It was kind of set up. It was like, well, we need Michael Burnham to be Michael Burnham.
Yep.
It didn't seem like, you know, I thought, well, they need someone that's, you know, going to be able to shoot a phaser. But otherwise, it did seem to be a weak reason for it. So I agree with you, Haley. No to the Trill being isolationist at the start and flipping so quick just because Adira remembered. Abomination to Shure will join the Federation gave me whiplash. I would agree with that. I kind of did a Ruthie there, didn't I?
You did.
I did, didn't I? By the way, Ruthie misses you guys. Hopefully she'll be back next week. So, if I didn't say that already, I think I did. But anyway, it was kind of quick, but I think they were coming from a position of fear and trying to preserve what they had, and had not ever seen a Trill symbiote successfully join with a non-human. The only example we'd ever seen was Riker, of course, and that didn't go so well. But I mean, I don't know. I understood it. Was it a little quick? Yes.
Yes.
It was. Could it have been better? Yes, it could have. It may have been part of the reason why I kind of only gave it a 9.4, although I do have some other reasons for it and that are Trill related, but wasn't specifically to the whiplash going on here. But
well, I could argue to explain part of that is maybe they looked at it as they thought it was unfair, some sort of intrusion. It didn't have the right reasons behind it.
Yeah.
That they are having problems. You know, they admitted they have problems because there's so many symbionts that are out in the wild that can't get home. So if you look at it, that maybe they were reading malicious intent into it or some less than noble reasons. But yeah, I won't argue with the fact it was kind of a fast turnaround.
I mean, you bring up a good point, a point that I hadn't thought of before, but it makes sense. The fact that the symbionts couldn't get back. I also thought of it that the symbionts were like on ships that exploded during the burn. But the fact that, you know, it's kind of like, and of course we cover an apocalyptic show, The Walking Dead. So, you know, we see this on that show, and I was bringing this up last week, I think, this very thing is like, you know, how are people going to die in the apocalypse? This kind of a thing. So you have this initial event, and you could almost consider this burn, you know, the burn kind of an apocalyptic event, but you're going to have further deaths as a result of the event that happened,
right.
Happen after, right? So because the lack of travel, that means trade shuts down. That means certain worlds that, you know, were dependent upon other worlds for certain resources can't get them anymore, or certain ships that were available aren't available anymore. So there's a scarcity of ships. Right. There's the inability to travel. There's, you know, stuff like that that causes this kind of thing. And so there was like the point I was making the other week on The Walking Dead, that like you get a cut and the cut gets, you know,
infected
and you die from the infection because you don't have an antibiotic or you can't get a tetanus shot or whatever, you know? So that's what happens in the apocalypse, you know, post-apocalypse. It doesn't matter what kind of apocalypse. In an interstellar apocalypse, you have a similar kind of thing, you know, the lack of trade, maybe certain, I don't know, certain weather systems, maybe they're powered with, maybe they use dilithium crystals. I don't know. So maybe it's not just used with warp drives, but maybe it's used for something else too. I don't know. But my point being that without those things being available, suddenly, several other things happen. So, anyway, that's my point. No to Adira pulling back from knowing so many times. I understand the reluctance at the start, but she backs out several times just so we can have Michael be inspirational. Okay. I don't have as much of a problem with you on that, but I get where you're coming from. So, yeah, I can go with that. Last one she has is, no Jet. She should have been at the dinner with everyone else. And you, James, and a lot of other people would say the same thing. So I totally agree with you. Okay. LT, what do you have?
Okay. For our no's, I guess I get to go first.
Yep.
And my no was our boy, Paul Stamets and his mood swings. I know that somebody had talked about it earlier, where he's back to form. But I thought we'd gotten through this in season two. I thought he had mellowed out a little bit.
A good, you know, PTSD experience will bring it back.
Yeah, it just seemed like we were back to snappy, snarky Stamets.
We were.
And as they kept saying, you were impaled on a shard and you were in a coma. But I thought we'd had some character growth there. I thought he had worked through his issues.
Yeah.
And just back to, you know, season one Stamets was just a little bit, if we're going to talk about a jump, that was a little bit of a jump for me.
It was. I agree. Yep.
And that's about it for me for hard nose.
Well, I guess my two no's were trill related as well. Those were really awful trill weapons, especially in the 32nd century. Really, that's as good as you could do. It was kind of like a 23rd century hybrid type of spear phasery thingy. How exactly does that work, kind of thing? It's like you couldn't have something better than that. So,
well, we still had, and I can't remember the name of them, save my life, but the choppy, bonky Vulcan weapons.
Yes.
Back from, you know, Ponfar
right.
days.
But those had the ceremonial, use. And I don't know if these were supposed to be ceremonial. I mean, they were with those guys were with the commissioner. So them carrying this like bulky, speary, shieldy, phasery thing just didn't make a lot of sense to me at all. So
maybe they mugged some gate guards from Stargate.
Yeah, maybe.
But it just, yeah, having a large staff type weapon just seemed kind of impractical.
Totally.
But they looked good.
They look great, but they just were impractical. And, you know, if they're trying to conceal their weapons, you know, there's no point. that is not a type of weapon that you could get a concealed.
Yeah, that would be kind of tough to hide under a coat.
Exactly.
But look at it like this. The Swiss guard for the Pope still carries halberds. So
yes. Yeah.
We'll just say that's part of their ceremonial garb.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess on that ground, I can accept it, but it was still a little weak. But my second one, and, you know, to you guys that said that the scene on the, you know, in the Trill caves, what was the name of it again, LT?
The Pools of Makala.
Thank you, Makala. For those of you that think that those scenes or the scene in general was too long, why wouldn't a Trill go in with them? Just to have Burnham go in there and you have Adira, neither of them know anything that's going on for, you know, I don't remember the name of like the head pool guy or whatever his name.
Like something Z.
Yes. Yes. Z. For Z not to go in there with them, it didn't make any sense to me. So that's where I can totally cite with you guys. He could have answered any question before it even came up. You know, he would have been like, oh, well, you need to do this and, you know, don't fight it. And, you know, let the things, you know, touch you and all that stuff. It just, that seemed to be just a little too much drama and making the stuff go too long for no real reason. So,
well, maybe he's like the operator of the carousel. He's got to be there to press the on and off switch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's the guy taking the tickets at the roller coaster.
Yeah.
Making sure everybody's of the right height and all.
Well, I can't argue with you.
Yeah.
Is it seems like that, you know, somebody who at least understood the process could have gone in, but we've already said that part of this was so Michael can be Michael-y.
Yeah, and Michael still could have been Michael-y, but it would have been a 47-minute episode, you know.
Instead of a 55, so.
Because we didn't get any 47, so that would have given us 47.
There you go.
All right, but yes, I think Michael still could have been Michael-y, just with a shorter episode. I didn't have a problem with the length of the episode, though, but for those of you who did, that's how you would fix it. All right, so that's it for our nose. So now it is time for Hold Your Horses.
Hello, this is Captain Tilly. What the hell? What the hell? Hold your horses!
LT, would you like to start with Comic Geek Cavs?
I shall. And just a sidebar note, we have only Hold Your Horses and Disco. We're not doing Not Good Enoughs and Hold Your Horses.
Right. Thank you, LT.
So Kev, for the purpose of editorial content, You're Not Good Enoughs are in Hold Your Horse country. So an executive decision, so mote it be.
Yes.
So
now, especially this week, because you and I had to collect all the notes, and we did it a lot later than we normally do it. You felt the pain.
I understand.
Yep.
The scales have been removed from my eyes, and I now see. So, Comic Geek Kev says, while seeing more of Culber was great, there was very little Non and no Jet Reno. He goes on to say, Buster Keaton? Really? Okay.
I think that was probably because Viacom CBS owns the Buster Keaton. Right. Yeah. I mean, I didn't look at it, but I'm guessing that's probably what it is.
Okay. He says, I get the dinner being with the bridge crew, but are Giorgio and Non considered bridge crew? Culber?
I don't know. I don't know about Giorgio. I guess she is just by stature. Non definitely is because she's chief of security. So yes, she definitely is bridge crew. Culber, well, that is your best argument that he is CMO, and Pollard wasn't there. So to me, you know, that tells you that. I guess like Linus, is he chief science officer?
It looks like it.
Might be, yeah. So either that or, but then again, you know, like, okay, what is Stamets? Is he chief science officer? I mean, originally I think in first season, there was a graphic that had him down as chief engineer, but we know that he's the writer said, no, he's not. So that confused things a lot.
Okay. To carry on with what he said, I love seeing them, but it seemed more like of a here's our regular cast dinner.
Yeah, it kind of did. Yeah.
Okay, he goes on to say, Saru apparently accepting the emergence of the Sphere AI taking over, or at least joining with, Discovery's computer. I can't believe he wouldn't be more concerned. While the Sphere itself ultimately proved not to be a big bad, and it's known that the information is there, I would think it taking over would be somewhat concerning. I didn't go back and check, but this is the same voice persona from a short track?
Yes, it is.
It is.
It just seems too much to trust for a guy who is normally pretty good at looking at the bigger picture. I guess it could make for some interesting stories, though.
I see where you're coming from on this to an extent. Perhaps he was expecting something like this to happen. And the fact that the examples, the things that the Sphere data suggested weren't, weren't malevolent at all. They were,
didn't seem very Leland-y.
Right. Right. Exactly.
And besides, she had that smooth voice.
Yes.
It's okay. And he said, finally says, what the hell is going on with Gray? Is he there? Is he just a projection of Adira's mind? A consequence of her being human, plus they were a couple, so his memory is different than that of the other hosts? I'm hoping, and assuming, this will get addressed. He asked why Adira didn't tell Burnham about him, didn't he? Maybe I'm missing something, but I'm confused.
Well, I mean, Adira didn't tell Burnham that Gray was still in Adira's mind. So I think that's what we're talking about. Like, I believe that Adira told Burnham about Gray, but not about the fact that Gray is still around.
She's seeing him.
Right. Exactly. So.
Okay. Wes from Minnesota says that dinner scene could have gone on longer. However, that being said, I would have liked to have seen more of the Tilly and Stamets apologizing to Saru.
It could have gone on longer.
But I think if they'd have gone longer, it might have lost a lot of the punch of what we got.
Yeah, I think it was a good amount. So I do agree with you, LT. I think it could have been longer, but I think if it had been much longer, it would have... people would be complaining right now that the the dinner scene was too long. So
yeah.
Rick from Cleveland is next. He says, hold your horses for Saru's exchange with the computer. What the frack? The computer's voice changes and starts exhibiting personality, and all you, the captain, do is have it run a diagnostic on itself? Wrong answer. Tilly, Stamets, or Reno? Again, no official department head. One of them should have been summoned immediately, because that seems like a big problem. To have Saru just casually mention it to Cobra later was also a bit off. Put in that context, Rick, I would agree that I have a feeling, though, like if I can kind of fast forward to my own hold your horses here. I'll just say what I was thinking, and that is dark matter plus Zora equals new interface for Spore Drive. That's what I'm thinking.
I think you may have a point there, Brian.
What?
It's not true. That's impossible.
What? I didn't use shock horror? Of course, I was going to use shock horror, but I just wanted to change the order. So that's what I think is going to happen here. I think we're going to get that's how the dark matter. I'm not really sure how the dark matter stuff fits in, but to me, it's going to be Zora. I think Zora is going to take over the need for Stamets to have to pilot, because Zora is going to be able to do, you know, the problem was that the computer wasn't fast enough. It couldn't do what it needed to do. Couldn't make the calculations, couldn't make the changes that were required, if I recall correctly. And I believe that Zora can probably pilot it even better than Stamets can. So that's what I'm thinking is going to happen here. Go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say, I think you've got a point there.
Yeah, I think I do too. Hold your, he says in a smug voice, hold your horses for the .7 usage. We saw these things first on the Enterprise last season. Now it seems they're everywhere on Discovery. Constantly welding the hull in the passageways where they weren't before. We get it. You want us to know they are there. We see them. Well, that's what I think is going to happen. I think that Zora is going to take over the .7s. And that's where we get a first usage of. Because to me, that seems a little more scary.
Well, they're in the credits.
The .7s are?
In the opening, opening scroll.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes.
So they've got to be a plot point if they're in the credits.
And you know, it's probably worth going back to looking. If the sphere data, if Zora is somehow in the credits, something I not noticed. And it's possible that they may have not been in the credits until this week. I don't know, but have to go back and look. The three times that I watched this episode, twice of the watches were on my phone. So, you know, it's not always the best viewing experience
tiny,
to pick
tiny
up.
Little,
yeah.
Tiny little screen.
Yeah. Lastly is Bob from Michigan. He says, Detmer's PTSD. It's a horrible condition, as I have personally witnessed its effects through two family members. But given how Detmer struck her head across her cerebral implant, I had thought it might be more physical, as in a damaged interface causing some slowly increasing issues. Okay. So not sure what to make of that. So you're not terribly happy with it, I guess. I liked that she's feeling the pressure, basically.
Yeah. It sounded like to me he's maybe more thinking, you know, was it the fact that when she got her bell rung, she hit her implant so that maybe there's a short or something's going on and the implant's causing the problem. But, you know, that could just be me reading into it.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, that is it for our listener Holds Your Horses. Let's go to you, LT. What do you have for Holds Your Horses? You seem to have more of them than I do.
I did. When we were talking about the scene with Gray and Adira earlier, it kind of made me wonder if Jadzia ever showed up on any of Esri's dates. You know, just this idea of, is this just unique to Adira because she's human? Or is this something that Trills have had to worry about for years, which goes back to, did Curzon show up on any of Jadzia's dates?
Oh, God. Well, so, and it's worth saying, you know, we had that one episode, I don't remember the episode name, but in season 7, when Esri hooked back up with Worf, or did you see that already?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Thank you. Spoiler. When Esri hooked back up with Worf, like, did Jadzia, you know, get involved there?
Yeah. Like, he likes it when you tickle his ridges.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it just made me kind of wonder.
Yeah.
It opened a can of worms and put thoughts in my head that I really didn't need. So, okay. My next Hold Your Horses is, so why'd they take a shuttle?
That is a good question. I had not thought of that, but that is a good question.
If everything's back up on the ship, why didn't they just beam down? Other than the fact of, if they beam down, then it would have been easier for them to bug out rather than take the long winding trail back to the shuttle pad so our guys with the large improbable weapons could jump out of the bushes at them.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. I hadn't thought of that one, but cannot argue.
Okay. My next Hold Your Horses, I caught myself.
Well, that I have to say.
Well, at least you didn't pull out the Homer. Don't. So my next point was, not enough meat for me on the idea of a generation ship. Because part of what Adira said was that they were taking a generation ship to find the Federation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, we're familiar with the concept, whether they're, you know, a sleeper ship or they have a ship large enough that they can reproduce and have kids. And it just seemed like if they were going to throw that out there, it just didn't have enough. You know, where did they come from? Where were they, you know, where were they trying to head? Just kind of made me wonder about that.
Mm-hmm.
And my last Hold Your Horses is just me being me. So when they were watching the movie, I guess they still have the vaguely conical red and white striped popcorn containers in the future.
Yeah.
I just thought that was kind of funny that we've, you know, they talk about future tech and things that survive into the far reaches of the far future, and freaking red and white striped cardboard popcorn containers are still present in the 33rd century.
Yeah. Yep. Always has to be some kind of popcorn bags or whatever, but yeah. I guess tradition.
Well,
I don't know.
Well, you know, and that always goes back to why were McCoy's surgical instruments like they were, because they wanted futuristic salt shakers for the salt vampire episode, but they ended up realizing nobody would realize what they were.
Right.
So they stole ones out of the commissary. So maybe that's it.
Yep. I was trying to think of what, I mean, I already said my big hold your horses, already. So the only other one I could think of right off the top of my head, maybe I'll come up with something later. But it would be, Giorgio not really being much like Giorgio. I mean, she wasn't, you know, she was kind of like, personality wise, she was that way, but, you know, she didn't really have much of a role here. She was just kind of like, you know, her usual, like, I fly to the beat of my own drum, you know, or I march to the beat of my own drum. No, I always mix my metaphors. Anyway, so she, is there for that, but otherwise, I mean, it just seemed like she was there because Michelle Yeoh had a contract for so many episodes. And, you know, maybe she is, you know, like we speculated, maybe she is going to disappear, you know, either time travel way or to, you know, like I think I said last week, to head Section 31 in the 32nd century, and maybe they're going to drop her off at some point, you know, midway in the season or something. But I just think that
she was a lot less scary Terran Empress and a lot more awkward aunt at Thanksgiving this year.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to put it. Yeah. She was like the crazy aunt kind of thing. Yeah. You know, so yeah, not exactly the same kind of character that we've gotten so far. So, okay. So that's it for our Hold Your Horses. So let's move on to the feedback section. And for a second time this week, open hailing frequencies. Okay. So let's start it with a voicemail from Jeff, X-Force 11.
Hello, Brian, Ruthie, and Star Trek fans. This is Jeff, X-Force 11, leaving my feedback. Oh, man, I am emotional after this episode. It was just so good and so needed. I loved the scene in the end where they talk about that they had to stop pretending they were fine. And I really think this speaks a lot to our society right now, that we've been trying to hold things together for so long, that we are on mission. And I just really feel like that, being in education and trying to help students. And I just think this episode was really needed. For me, I don't know about other folks, but I think it was really needed for me. This episode was beautifully shot. I love the writing and the insight into the Trill society and getting to see a picture of what that bonding is like and how it's different because it's not with a Trill, but with a human. And I am just blown away by this episode. I just love this season, and really, this episode is what I needed. All right, those are my thoughts. X-Force 11 is out.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff, X-Force 11, for your feedback this week yet again. And that streak is continuing. I have to go back and see how far it goes, because I know it goes into Picard. So, and I know you sent this feedback for all 10 episodes of Lower Decks, and this is now 4 of Discovery. So anyway, Jeff, thank you so much yet again.
You're on a roll, brother. Keep it up.
You are. Well, you know, it was a touching episode, I think, for Adira And I thought that it was, you know, it was really good kind of thing to see that. I didn't really see that it was going to be, you know, her boyfriend that was the host and not Senna Tal. I thought maybe she had some kind of like, you know, block because the experience was traumatic or something. But the way that it went, that was something. And you know what? Now I remember my other hold your horses. That often happens. So, and I'll give it here, right here, since I thought of it now, is that why did a 32nd century ship, generational ship, why did it get hit by an asteroid?
Maybe the deflectors weren't working. Maybe it only needs deflectors when they're at warp speed.
Yeah, I don't know. It was kind of that was the one thing that was kind of surprising about it. But yeah, I should have mentioned that in my hold your horses, but didn't get a chance to write it out. So, yeah. And the second thing about that, of course, the crew, they are together as a crew, as a family. And I like that. And I think it was needed. And I think it's what the crew needs. You know, I kind of thought they had it, but maybe this kind of just puts it in more, you know, solidifies things. And of course, it reminded me of Enterprise, which I know you're a big Enterprise fan, and I'm sure you thought the same. Because that crew did the movies all the time. So, and they kind of bonded over their experience. So it would make sense that Discovery's crew would bond over their experience. But it's like, that's kind of my point. It's like, you guys haven't bonded yet. You guys went
how long have you been together?
Well, you went to the Mirror Universe, you know, you stopped control, you know, you've been through a lot already. Like you've now gone to the 32nd century and you still don't feel connected, you know? So, okay, that's another hold your horses. So there you go. I don't know. I enjoyed it. So, all right. Do you have anything else that you want to say about Jeff's feedback?
Nope. I'm loving it.
Okay. Well, let's move on to Fred's feedback. This is, of course, Fred from the Netherlands. And again, Fred, you got your feedback in pretty early. So thank you very much for doing that. Anyway, here it is.
Hello, Brian and Ruthie, and all listeners to Talk True Media. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Star Trek Discovery Season 3, Episode 4. It's a pity that we lost the interaction between Michael and Book here in this episode, and I really hope that will come back sometime. I found a disagreement that happened at a table, at Saru's dinner table, a little bit over the top. Okay, that two people quarrel, but that everybody starts to quarrel. It's not impossible, but I think quite unlikely in that manner. So it was okay, but it felt a little bit unrealistic. I did like the whole Trill story and the revelation that symbionts also could take a place in a non-Trill body. Only a little strange that in all these centuries that was never discovered before. Very brave of the makers of this Star Trek to use trans and non-binary actors. Really, really good. Okay, only short feedback for now. I hope you will survive your elections over there on the other side of the big pond. I will not go into details, but as a foreigner, I'm looking at this whole process with big amazement. Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
Well, thank you so much, Fred, for your voicemail, and good to hear from you again. And all I can say to you is you have not experienced Thanksgiving Day dinners. Because, you know, I'm Canadian, but I have lived here, you know, for 20 years. But, you know, we also have Thanksgiving Day in Canada. It's not as big of a deal, to be honest, but it is a thing. It is, you know, what is Columbus Day in the States, it's the same Monday. And, but, you know, it's one of those dinners where you get a bunch of family. It's usually a bunch of family that doesn't see each other except for, you know, maybe Christmas, Thanksgiving, maybe Easter, you know, here, maybe 4th of July, in Canada, maybe the, you know, 1st of July. And, you have a big meal, you drink a little too much, and, sometimes just things happen. So, yeah. You know,
and especially from my perspective, you have a very large extended family.
Yeah.
And so all the aunts, uncles, and cousins are all together, and there's always a little bit of something.
Yeah.
Maybe not to this extent, but. Yeah.
In my case, I have a very small, you know, inner family, and, you know, both my wife and I, we, you know, we're born and raised only children, and, you know, we're now, my parents have passed away, you know, my dad coming up on 20 years, my mom 16 years ago, my wife's stepdad passed away 14 years ago, and her mom lives up in Michigan. We don't see her very much. So, you know, we're kind of don't do that anymore, but I have a huge extended family. But, you know, since I moved away from Canada, it's largely, I just see them on Facebook at this point. So, but when I was growing up, you know, I had these, you know, every, you know, Christmas, Easter, Thanksgiving, all those, that we had these like huge, big, you know, sometimes 30, 40 people there. Mm-hmm. So you had all sorts of things that could potentially happen. Usually they were pretty tame, but I do remember a few that were a little rowdier than others, you know. So, and then, you know, when you also like extend that to maybe New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, because we used to also have a big celebration on New Year's Day, and that involved the bowl games and more drinking and more eating. And yeah, so anyway, that's all I'll tell you, Fred. It's, you know, just,
it's different.
It's different. I don't know if there is an equivalent in the Netherlands for what we have here. No book. I don't know where book would have fit into this episode, to be honest. So, I think him not being in this episode to me made sense. So, I think Giorgio being in this episode didn't make a lot of sense. You know,
but she's on the ship.
Right. Exactly. And someone said Nan didn't have much to do. I would agree with that, but again, she's on the ship. So, you know, the elections, I can sympathize. I'm a little more probably aware of the whole elections thing because I've, grown up with it, you know, watching it, you know, from the other side of the border. So I've been, you know, following U.S. elections my whole life, pretty much. But I'm still not a U.S. citizen, so I can't vote. So it's still very much, I'm very much an outsider. And I don't want to talk about why I can't vote, except that it is a source of contention between my wife and me.
Right.
Yeah. So I want to become a citizen, and we just anyway, that's all I'll say.
And I was going to say, as a native, it's one of those things. If you tried to explain about how, well, since Brian's here, I had a friend of mine who's Canadian explain about how parliamentary elections go. I have a friend in the United Kingdom who was talking about how they do elections in England. So ours are just, as most of my European friends would say, they're more American because they're louder and they're more expensive. And
yeah. Yeah. That's the main thing. I mean, aren't the Canadian and the UK pretty much the same in how they do the elections, or is there a difference? Yeah.
It's pretty similar.
Yeah.
And
much cheaper, limited time span, like 60 days and it's done. And you only vote once. That's the main difference. It's basically, it would be the equivalent of voting for your congressman. You vote for your congressman belongs to a party. If your congressman wins and the party, his party picks up the most seats and that party forms a majority, they get to have the prime minister, and, you know, it would essentially be like the president, but that's not how the U.S. election works. It's completely different. So,
and the fact that you can have, however, you know, 6 or 7 different parties, and they all sort of talk amongst themselves and figure out whose side they're going to be on.
Right.
So it's different.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's more, I think in the UK, there are probably more parties, like essentially in Canada, there are 3 main parties. Like Quebec has another main party, but for the most of the time, it's been like 3 main parties. One leans to the left, one leans to the right, one's in the middle, and the one in the middle kind of shifts a little bit between the left and the right. But it's usually, they're the one that usually gets the power. Not always, but the one on the left never gets in power, but they influence the liberals, are called which is the one kind of,
right,
slightly left of center. So,
well, at this point, I'm just wishing it was over.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just from the amount of ads on TV and the amount of mail I was getting, I just like for it to be tidy for once and be over.
And phone calls and mail. And I didn't really get any door to door, but I have gotten that in the past.
It's the advantage of living in the sticks.
Yeah.
They haven't come out to find me yet.
Yeah. I mean, but here, you know, you have the whole electoral college, and, you know, so there's no, it doesn't go by popular vote. It's just a whole thing. I'm not, Ruthie is very much a scholar in the electoral college. So, I'm sure she would give you, a lecture on it if you wanted one.
Well, and I could jump up and,
yeah,
pull out my soapbox on why I think it's still relevant,
but yeah,
we will leave that alone.
The last thing about the trans and non-binary characters, I think it's great. I will say something that I think shows my age. It's not, I don't mean this in a negative way at all, but I'll just be straightforward. I certainly have, experience with, you know, trans. A very good friend of mine is a transsexual. So, you know, I certainly understand that kind of thing. I knew her as a man originally, and, you know, now know her as a woman. And, you know, it's been, I think it's great. I think that, it's great that she, made that change for her. And, you know, so, but yeah, like one of my best friends is trans. The non-binary thing is something completely new to me. So, if I struggle with this in an episode, please forgive me. I understand what it is, but the whole concept of a non-binary person, it's something I've seen people be, but this is a new thing. Like, up until recently, I never heard of it being there being a name for it. And I never heard of, like, you know, using different pronouns. I don't know what rock I was under while this kind of happened, but you know, I'm just admitting this is a new thing for me. I certainly, you know, support, you know, anything that makes if you identify with it, I think it's great. It's just not anything that I've been exposed to, so I'm learning as I go, but I think it's great. But I feel old.
Yeah, I'll go along with that.
Yeah. So, and anyway, I may have offended people by saying that. Please don't be offended. I want to be educated. By the end of the season, I want to understand it a lot better than I do. And I support it. Okay. That's what I'll say. I'll support it, but I'm also, it's like the whole, it's like Black Lives Matter. I'm not black. When the whole thing came up, I didn't really understand it. Okay. It wasn't something that I had any firsthand experience with. So I wasn't against it. I wanted to know more. So it's the same kind of thing here. I am not experienced with people that I identify themselves as non-binary. I'm not against it. So I look forward to finding more about it and being able to be knowledgeable about it. So hopefully I've explained that. Okay. All right. Okay. So we have one more bit of feedback from Comic Geek Kev. Why don't you read that one, LT?
Okay. Comic Geek Kev says, lots of talking, but it was needed. I didn't check out the preview, but I'm hoping for some good old action next week. Looking forward to the podcast. I'm a much bigger fan of the action-packed episodes, but I understand that pretty much every show needs some downtime in that regard, whether it's for story advancement or just budgetary reasons. For a pretty low action episode, I really enjoyed this one. It addressed multiple issues that needed attention, and while I don't think it did much to advance the season storyline, in the last minute it showed that we needed to take the journey to get the next piece of the puzzle from Adira about the Federation.
Well, yes, that was the last part. I think that it didn't advance the storyline except for to make it possible for the storyline to advance next episode, right? So I think for her memory block to be removed and for her to understand her identity and, you know, what she knows as Senna Tal, I think was needed. So while there wasn't any direct action on the storyline, I think that it was very much a contained episode, you know, self-contained. It was very much a Star Trek episode to me than you know, some of the other types of things that we could say. This seemed very much like a Star Trek episode that we could have seen on another version of the show, right? Like,
right.
We could have seen this on Enterprise. We could have seen this on Next Gen. We saw an episode like this on Deep Space Nine. So to me, it worked in that
regard. It was a very Star Trek episode.
Yeah.
And I'll agree with you that it wasn't a direct setup for the next episode, and maybe it didn't directly lead to the next plot point. It was expositional in the places it needed to be to fill in some of the gaps that we will pay off later.
Yes.
And
I agree.
I'm all for that. If you're going to throw me a loose end out there, then be sure to tie it up later. And from what I'm seeing, that's exactly what they did. I think it set the stage for several things. It laid some groundwork, and I'm pretty confident that they'll pay those off later downrange.
I agree. All right. So that is it for our feedback for this week. So do you have any other notes that you want to bring up?
Well, I think my only other point for this episode was when we got into talking about the sphere data, that it was, I don't want to say it was the elephant in the room, but it was the driver behind this whole jump to the future. And
yeah.
So yeah. Now we're starting to see the manifestation of having all that data, you know, on the computer in the ship. So everybody talked about Saru and why he was not more excited or concerned than he was. And I think that this just sort of, you know, all the sphere data and all it knows, it's starting to reach in and do some things. Because, I mean, we saw last season, the sphere data wouldn't let him delete it. You know, it wouldn't let him destroy the ship. So I don't really have a problem with what they were talking about with Saru saying, well, maybe the data is trying to protect us. And like you said, this is sort of the start of the manifestation of the AI side of it.
Right.
Because we know that the sphere was sentient. We know that the sphere, you know, knew things. So I think it's going to be interesting how they pay all of that off later.
Yeah.
But I didn't have as much problem with it. Now, the only thing is we know the sphere data is, you know, immense and detailed, and it has a lot of points of information about all kinds of things. So what I'm wondering about is how they're going to, you know, fill in those gaps. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, just wondering how, if I get to come back later and, you know, talk more about what the sphere data did mm-hmm. in the next few episodes.
That might be possible.
I believe it will be.
Yeah. Yeah. One way or the other. Well, we do hope that Ruthie will return, but the option is always there for bringing on an additional guest host. We have done that before. So, and of course, you know, you're part of the network now, so you get first dibs.
Yay.
All right. The only thing that I want to bring up here is that I recognized the leader, and I did not get her name. I should go and look up her name.
Leader Pav?
Leader Pav, yes.
It's Karen Robinson.
Karen Robinson, who is on Schitt's Creek. So I have not seen the sixth season yet of Schitt's Creek, but I plan to do that shortly. That was a show that I watched the first five seasons in very short order, and then found out that Netflix didn't have season six yet. I was pissed off, but now it does. And yeah, so she plays Ronnie. Oh, she's actually... Oh, okay. So she was born in England, raised in Jamaica, moved to Alberta. So she's Canadian actress, but she plays Ronnie. All right. So that's it. There's probably something else I wanted to bring up, but I can't think of it right now. I guess, you know, I could say that I really did enjoy the haiku the haikus on as part of the dinner scene. I thought that was, you know, kind of that also can come up in the middle of, you know, the kind of Thanksgiving or whatever, where you're playing games and sometimes they're word games and things like that. So I thought that was a good call to that. Okay. So anyway, let's move on to our spot the references /47 section. So here we go. Okay, so as usual with all of the episodes that we've done so far this season, we are using an article from danofgeek.com. So we will have a link to it in the blog post and on the Facebook group. Let's see. So we, of course, if you don't understand how trill names work, the first name goes with the host, and the second name is the name of the symbiont. So I'm sure most of you know that, though. Cobra had a spinning medical scanner similar to the ones that Bones had in TOS. We hear Adira mentioned Bajoran Hasperat. I wondered when she said that if TOS, you know, or Discovery knew about the Bajorans at this point, or is Bajor a planet that they hear about later? You know, I wasn't too sure about that, but of course, she mentions a dish called Hasperat that is mentioned a lot in both
DS9.
Yeah. First brought up in TNG's preemptive strike. So that is something that Ensign Ro mentions. There's no precedent. Of course, well, we don't have a precedent of a successful one, but we do have the host episode, and that is one where Riker got the symbiont. So that's I know James mentioned that last week. So,
but he wouldn't have known because they were wormholing,
right? The caves of Makala was mentioned in the Equilibrium episode of Deep Space Nine. We mentioned the tardigrade on the Glen. That was, of course, referring to Context is for Kings when they went to visit the Glen and they picked up the tardigrade there. The butcher's knife cares not for the lamb's cry. That's episode 4, season 1. That's where the tardigrade actually hooks up to the spore drive. And, you know, the following episode, Choose Your Pain, that's when Stamets actually injects himself with the tardigrade DNA and becomes its pilot. 932 years of technological advancement. I'm thinking this means 1 year since Stamets' research before they jump. 930-year jump, 1 year between Burnham's jump and the Discovery's jump, so that makes 932. That's my take on it. So
okay.
We mentioned Tilly and dark matter. Of course, Tilly did a thing with dark matter in season 2, episode 2, New Eden, and that's the one where she tries to capture some dark matter from that dark matter asteroid that was in the shuttle bay. And that in part brings out May. I think May was already there, but that kind of May kind of shows up for the first time. But
right.
Basically she gets knocked out. Stamets mentions the mycelial network is a subspace domain, meaning that it is not part of normal space. So, okay. So we already know that. So, and They say, what Stamets is kind of saying is dark matter exists in real space and all the spore drive stuff happens in not real space. Okay. The Dot 7 bots, we see them in Such Sweet Sorrow Part 2, the season finale of Discovery Part 2. And then, of course, we see them in the Short Treks episode, Ephraim and Dot, also known as the episode of Star Trek, the Star Trek Discovery podcast, where Ruthie was a grumpy person.
Because she doesn't like cartoons.
Oh, God. She not like cartoons. I really want to know where that comes from, because she does not like them at all. And it just seems like some kind of, I don't know. I've never known anyone that dislikes cartoons as much as she does. So
obvious trauma from Tom and Jerry at some early point in life,
one would think. Let's see. Well, this is interesting. Burnham and Akira take a shuttle down to the planet. Why don't Burnham and Adira? I said Akira. I said Akira, didn't I?
You did.
Okay. Well, sorry about that. I won't change it because I admit it. Why don't Burnham and Adira beam down to the surface of Trill? Well, that is because in the TNG episode, The Host, Trill couldn't use the transporter because it would damage the symbiont. But in Deep DS9, Dax beamed up and down all the time. We also saw Adira beam aboard Discovery in the previous episode. Are they slightly more worried now? Just being careful. I don't know.
We don't know.
No. The Trill Guardians say that in 2,000 years, there's been no single recorded instance of a joining between a human and a symbiont. And I don't know if that is what I see here is exactly true, because I think they said a successful joining. So,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is.
So if you say successful joining, they are correct.
Yeah. Cause Riker's body rejected the symbiont. So, and you know, whether or not there was like a question of, the symbiont like rejecting Riker or whatever, you know, but the main thing was that, he couldn't hold the symbiont for long term. So,
right.
Let's see. They say, we are not Federation members. The Trill Guardians mentioned that they are not part of the Federation, which seems similar to the status of Earth in Episode 3. There's just one difference. Although we've seen several Trill serve in Starfleet throughout the years, it was never explicitly stated in on-screen canon that the planet Trill was part of the Federation, though some non-canon books do put it in the Federation as of 2285, the same year as the Wrath of Khan. I mean, I don't know. I think I want to say that they were, but,
well, but how many other species are in Starfleet that are not from Federation member planets?
Yeah. I mean, we've seen, Ferengi, we've seen Bajorans up until, well, we know that they are now, but, you know, in the Next Gen era, they weren't. As of Lower Decks, we now see Orions.
And drawing a blank, but what about Non?
Right. She is a...
Yeah, I drew the same blank.
Barzan.
Because we know that the Barzan were not members of the Federation when they had their first appearance in Next Gen.
Right. They most certainly were not.
So I wouldn't say it's completely without precedent for a non-member world to have people in Starfleet.
No. No, this, I mean, there's definitely a lot of examples of it. So, and you know, I mean, that you could say the same on Earth for, like, you will have so many examples of, like, you know, immigration. So people not from one country being citizens of another country. et cetera, or, you know, even like, you know, for second generation. So it happens. Let's see. Viable Trill hosts. Yes, this came up in Equilibrium as well. And there was a whole thing about a lot more Trill could carry a symbiont than was originally stated, but you know, there could be various reasons why that's true. You know, that wasn't Federation protocol. I would say shooting a guy at point blank range was probably not something that was Federation protocol. Of course, we get Zora. We've talked about that. What's you and what's all the other hosts? In the flashback, Adira asks Gray which parts of his personality are coming from him and which parts are coming from the previous hosts of the Tall symbiont. When Ezri Dax was first given the Dax symbiont, she had similar questions about what she was really like. Okay. We see medical bots, which are foreshadowed in the new credits. I don't know if they were medical bots. I always thought they were Dot Sevens. Previous hosts of Tal have various new Starfleet uniforms. Yes, I noticed that too. We saw the Star Trek Picard style uniform, and we see Senna Tal had some other kind of uniform. So at least according to what math that Den of Geek has done, this implies that the Tal symbiont is at least 789 years old, but actually probably much older. So, and I'd have to go back and take another look at that, but that's the last that they have there. So that's it.
Yep.
Okay. So, let's now move on to our news and info and whatnot. So let's do shipwide announcements. I'm going to ask this question to you because I didn't get to watch The Ready Room yet. Did you get to watch it?
Neither did I.
Okay. So I may add something in here if I get a chance to watch it, which I probably will before this episode goes out. So if there's something good, I will add it in here. So you'll hear it maybe. And I'll do it quite unsubtly. The Ready Room had Anthony Rapp and Wilson Cruz on it. And beyond that, I don't know what was on there. So if there is something to mention, you'll hear it right now. Okay. So as far as news, and we have to thank again Wes Huntington for collecting these for us. Season 4 of Discovery started production this week. And that is, of course, the first major live action Star Trek production in wake of COVID-19. So we know that Lower Decks has been going on, but you know that doesn't involve any location shooting or any kind of sets or anything like that. That's just animation and voiceover and whatnot. So,
right.
We did get confirmation that Adira will be in season 4 of Discovery. So yay. Of course, recently we had the in Bloomington, Indiana, the statue of Catherine Janeway being, you know, unveiled. There is a similar momentum that is actually backed by Julie Nimoy, Leonard Nimoy's daughter, about them building a statue of Leonard Nimoy in his hometown of Boston. I assume he's as Spock, but I don't know for sure. Apparently, this was first proposed in 2015, and it's now gaining momentum within the Boston City Council. So I think this would be great. I assume it would be as Spock, I think that would be a good thing. So, and of course, if you didn't know, Leonard Nimoy is originally from Boston, so that's where he got censors, as far as I know. There is also new merchandise out for fans to support GLAAD within the familiar Starfleet arrowhead with the trans pride flag colors. Okay. I'm not sure that might be available on Amazon. I don't know, because I know there's that thing going on Amazon this month. This would be the point where we would talk about Discovery. Of course, it's airing right now, season one on CBS Thursday nights at 10, but it was preempted this week due to continuing election coverage, so it did not air this week. However, we do have Parrot Analytics numbers, and Discovery is down one spot this week in the digital originals for the U.S., and it went from number 5 to number 6, holding fairly steady. Mandalorian was up from it stayed at number 1 but went higher at 70.9 times, which is within the exceptional category. Discovery maintains that, it looks like. They're just on the border between exceptional and outstanding at 33.4 times the average demand. So that's pretty good. That is, hopefully they will stay within the top 10 throughout the whole run of Discovery this season. So, okay, so that's it for our news section. We're going to have LT read this part. So if people want to submit their theories and feedback, how would they do so?
Well, to submit your theories and feedback, go to talkthroughmedia.com/feedback, where you can submit both text or audio. You can call 216-232-6146 to leave a voicemail. You can also go send us email at StarTrekDiscovery@talkthroughmedia.com. You can post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/StarTrekTTMPodcasts. The deadline for Discovery Season 3, Episode 5 will be on our regular day and time, Friday, November the 13th, 2020 at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, and 0000 hours UTC.
Friday the 13th. Yep. Connect with us. Our Twitter is Star Trek TTM, as is our Instagram. And we've finally been getting those Instagram posts out there with our episodes. So we also have a TikTok, which hasn't been getting in the rotation. But if you want to join that, that's at Star Trek TTM. And most of the posts that I do are on my personal TikTok, although I haven't done any in quite a while now, but I will try to be changing that, because I've got a whole bunch of content for Star Trek and Walking Dead that I have been ready to do and just haven't done it. But it's at BRIANMELOCHE. And you can also, our episodes, when they come out, they are first posted on the Facebook page for Talk Through Media, and those can be shared within Facebook. So that's at facebook.com/talkthroughmedia. Those are then shared to the Facebook group, but the Facebook page, like I say, you can share those and you can help get the word out. within Facebook. But help us, of course, when we tweet and when we post to Instagram. You can help us by posting those. And I should also mention, I didn't mention this, I mentioned my TikTok, but I also have Brian Melosh at Instagram. So join or, you know, follow me there and I will follow you back. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or the podcast client of your choice if you don't do so already, because that way you will get the episodes when they come out, and that, you know, helps us because you can give us a rating, a review, and help more people find us, because, you know, that it's been a while actually since we've gotten any iTunes reviews at all or Apple Podcasts. So that would be helpful. And of course, there is also Podchaser. That is a like website, but it's also used in several different apps that don't have their own like ratings review section. You simply just post to podchaser.com, or you can do it within your app and post it there. And anyway, that helps get the word out to us. Stitcher is another one that has it. But there are many others that if you can rate or review, please do so. Podchaser has a nice thing where you can rate individual episodes. So that's helpful. You can also support us by becoming a supporter on Patreon, a patron. And we would like to thank Clint McCollum, this guy over here, LT, Lawrence Todd, James Robbins, of course, from last week's show, Fred Petrie, Fred from the Netherlands, Kyle McAdams, who we had hoped to have on this week, but he couldn't make it again, Kim Vogley, Brian Shiro, Christoph Lechner, Lee Radke, Aaron Mays, Michael Carrier, Stephen Chambers, Kevin Lyle, Jeff Gentry, and Jeff Bayako. All of our new episodes are on YouTube first. So just search for Talk Through Media on there, and remember to subscribe and click the bell to get notified when we have new videos, because they go out there first and you can get the podcast there before everything else, because usually it will take anywhere from a couple of hours to even an extra day before the episode gets released on the feed. Now, this past week, I was able to get this one out way faster than I had been in the past. Hopefully, I will be able to do that again, but I won't make any promises. And you'll know if you get it, if you get it nice and early again, you'll know that I was able to do it. But if you are listening to us, you're probably listening to us on the Star Trek Discovery podcast feed, but you can also get, and on that, you get episodes of the Star Trek Picard cast and the Star Trek Lower Decks podcast, which LT's been on before, as part of that feed. But there's, you can also get it through the Talk Through Media all-inclusive feed, which also has, in addition to the three podcasts I just mentioned, The Walking Dead Talk Through, and of course, Free of the Walking Dead Talk Through, but it's basically the same thing. So we don't usually say that because it's all on the same feed. But anyway, The Walking Dead Talk Through, the Rebinge DS9 podcast, which of course is covering Deep Space Nine, and the Let's Talk Through podcast that we did once. And hopefully we'll get back to that soon. LT and Kyle are doing Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through, but I've been on all the episodes, so I don't know why we don't just say that. But there's going to be coming a point soon where I won't be able to attend, won't be on the whole thing.
You keep throwing those disclaimers.
I know.
Only
I know.
And then you show up.
I know. It's because I can't do it, but I can't. But I've got some stuff coming up soon that I won't be able to make it. So
I tried to walk away, but they keep pulling me back in.
Yeah. Yeah. Godfather 3. Anyway, we just recorded an episode for season 6, episode 4, which was kind of a weird one. But you should have it by the time that you get this episode, but we kind of recorded it. I mentioned it before. We were not all together to record this one. So LT recorded his pieces. I recorded mine, and Kyle recorded his, and he's kind of assembling them all together. So kind of the first time we've ever done this before, but given the situation, Kyle wasn't available, and we couldn't do it on a normal night because of the election, and we couldn't do it the night after because of the other stuff, and we couldn't even do it on Thursday. So it was like, okay, let's just record our stuff. We'll assemble it. So it'll be different, but hopefully it won't be terrible. Next episode of the Star Trek Discovery podcast, we'll be covering season 3, episode 5, titled Die Trying. It is a story by James Duff and Sean Cochran with a teleplay by Sean Cochran. We don't know who's directed it or the description, but we do know from the trailer that aired at the end of Discovery this week that it seems like they are going to the Federation. Although I did see someone on the podcast, on the Facebook group, say that it looked like a Vichy Federation or Vichy Starfleet.
So I guess we will find out.
Right. Yeah, Aaron actually said, doesn't it seem like they're not the real Starfleet, like a Vichy Starfleet? I have concerns about them. So anyway, so until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm LT.
And thank you so much, LT, for doing this a second week in a row. Like I say, hopefully Ruthie will be back next week. And maybe we'll still have you on, though. Never know. But anyway, thank you so much for doing this. So peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.